Joe got us going in our new quarterly last week with our first lesson in Exodus. Our new quarterly will cover all of Exodus and Leviticus. There'll be 9 lessons in Exodus and 4 in Leviticus. The highlighted verses for each lesson will bring out important passages in each portion of that week's lesson. But as we go through the quarter, the material to be covered will include all of each book. I encourage you to read the Bible material listed in the Understanding the Context section of your quarterly. Additionally, there's an article in front of your quarterly on page 8 entitled Introduction to Exodus and Leviticus. It provides some interesting and enlightening information that will make the study more understandable. Also, on pages 127, 128, and 129 of your quarterly, there's an article entitled Holy, a Word Study. It's worth your time to read. I hope you'll do it. Last week's material for study was chapters 1 through 4 of Exodus. Jacob and his relatively small family who had come to Egypt had grown to over 2 million in the 400 years that had passed. This large group had been enslaved for most of that long period. The Pharaohs had tried to limit the growth of the Israeli people, but because of God-fearing midwives, they were unsuccessful. We were introduced to Moses and learned the trials and tribulations he went through as God prepared him, along with his brother Aaron, to be chosen to be God's tool to bring the Israelites out of Egypt. Moses met God at the burning bush, and God told Moses his plan to bring the Israelites out of Egypt. Not surprisingly, Moses found several reasons he shouldn't be the one to do the job God had called him to do. God provided Aaron to be Moses' helper or assistant. God also provided Moses with several signs that were supposed to encourage the Pharaoh to let the Israelites go. But God told Moses that Pharaoh's heart would be hardened and that he would not let the Israelites go until God had performed a number of seemingly impossible tasks that would eventually change Pharaoh's mind. Today's material for study is chapters 5 through 10 of Exodus. The title of today's lesson is Confrontation. The quarterly's author gave the lesson a subtitle of God Displays His Power, Reminding All That He Alone Is Worthy of Worship. The highlighted verses for today's lesson are 7:1 through 7:13. As Christians, we affirm that God is all-powerful and He is able to perfectly accomplish His will. We all know that God is omnipotent and all-powerful. In Genesis 18:14 and Jeremiah 32:27, the question is asked, is anything too hard for God? Ironically, even though we know God's characteristics, we often treat His omnipotence as hypothetical. We don't necessarily question God's power directly, but we live our day-to-day lives in such a manner that raises the question. As our quarterly's author put it, let's be honest. We all like to be in control and calling the shots. We may, and likely do, have our own ideas about how God should work in specific situations. We may not be questioning His power, but we likely are questioning His wisdom and willingness to act. It boils down to us being stubborn and not willing to let God be God. He is God, and we better not forget it. In Exodus 5 through 10, we enter into the saga of Israel's slavery under Pharaoh. It's important to remember that the Egyptian people viewed the Pharaoh as the divine offspring of their sun god, Ra. They believed in an afterlife and believed that Pharaoh became the god of the afterlife after his earthly death. Thus, Pharaoh was a false god waging war against the God of Israel, our real, living, true God. In this narrative, Pharaoh was not only hostile to God's people, but also hostile to the one true God. At every turn, Pharaoh used his power to oppose God's purpose for his people. This portion of Exodus is a narrative reporting the divine war between the God of Egypt, Pharaoh, and the God of Israel, our one true God. They are delivering blow after blow to one another. However, in the end, the God of Israel was the only one standing as the true and sovereign God over all creation. After Moses' encounter with God at Mount Horeb, in Exodus chapter 3 and 4, Moses and Aaron confronted Pharaoh for the first time about releasing God's people in chapter 5, verse 1. They requested that Pharaoh allow the Israelites to be allowed to go into the desert or wilderness to worship and offer sacrifices to God. In 5:2, Pharaoh's response was swift and decisive. Who is the Lord that I should obey him by letting Israel go? I don't know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go. The Israelite foreman, working under the Egyptian overseers, confronted Moses and Aaron, blaming them for the Israelites' additional suffering. Because of this unsuccessful first encounter with the Pharaoh and the upset Israeli foreman, Moses experienced a major moment of self-doubt. Exodus 5, 22 and 23 records Moses' spiritual agony and self-doubt. Lord, why have you caused trouble for these people? And why did you ever send me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has caused trouble for this people, and you haven't rescued them at all. Moses needed assurance that what God had called him to do and say was right and true. God answered Moses with stunning clarity in 6:1. Now you will see what I will do with Pharaoh. Because of a strong hand, he will let them go. And because of a strong hand, he will drive them from the land. Furthermore, God reminded Moses that he would grant his people freedom, no matter the consequences of Moses' first visit with Pharaoh. In addition, God did a very gracious thing for Moses. He reminded Moses that he was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that he was a covenant-keeping God. God was reminding Moses that God was reminding Moses that there was a larger redemptive story. God's plan to make a people for himself, and no man, not even Pharaoh, would be able to hinder God's purpose. God declared that since Pharaoh would not let the Israelites go, he would bring his people out by his own power. Moses and Aaron again confronted Pharaoh, showing him a sign by turning Aaron's staff into a snake. But when the Egyptian sorcerers did the same thing with their staves, Pharaoh refused to let the Israelites go, even though the snake from Aaron's staff swallowed the snakes from the Egyptians' staffs. God then sent a series of 10 plagues on the Egyptians. 9 of the 10 plagues are in today's study material, although none are in the highlighted verses for today's study. On page 26 of your quarterly, there's a list of the plagues and the specific verses in the Bible where the plagues are described. Moses announced each plague, and each plague arrived and departed exactly as he stated. As the plagues progressed, they became more and more devastating. Several times during this progression of plagues, Pharaoh promised to let the Israelites go. But when each plague ended, he refused to let the Israelites go. These plagues punished Egypt, showed the powerlessness of the gods, of the Egyptian gods, and demonstrated God's sovereignty. God is sovereign and all-powerful, omnipotent. That's something we should always remember. As we get into the highlighted verses for today's study, the first subheading is titled Strategy Explained, and it covers verses 1 through 5 of chapter 7. Verses 1 and 2 read, "The Lord answered Moses, 'See, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and Aaron your brother will be your prophet. You must say whatever I command you. Then Aaron, your brother, must declare it to Pharaoh so that he will let the Israelites go from his land.'" God explained to Moses his strategy for the release of his people. First, he told Moses that he would give him a persona before Pharaoh, that was powerful and confident. "See, I have made you like God to Pharaoh." Moses was not a god. In fact, we've already seen and learned that he could be rather reluctant and obstinate at times. But Pharaoh would experience God's work in Moses as if he were a god, powerful and confident. Second, God would give Aaron to serve Moses as prophet. Moses doubted his effectiveness as a speaker, as we read in 4:10 and 6:30. So in response, God called Aaron to speak on Moses' behalf. As God called Moses to be his instrument, he also called Aaron to be the instrument through whom Moses would speak. The Lord instructed Moses to speak to Pharaoh exactly as instructed. He was told by God to speak, "Whatever I command you." Key concepts, already mentioned in chapter 4, verses 14 through 16, are summarized and repeated here, but with some differences. In 4:16, Aaron was called the mouth. Here in 7:2, Aaron is specifically called a prophet. In 4:16, the emphasis was on Aaron speaking to the people. Here, the designated audience is Pharaoh. Aaron was called to speak God's message to both the Israelites and to Pharaoh. The reference to Egypt as his land, that is, Pharaoh's land, highlights the fact that Moses and the Israelites were to think about Egypt as someone else's land, not their own. The Israelites did not belong in Egypt. God had promised them another land. In contrast to his land, your land is the term given to the promised land, as verses 26 and 33 in chapter 23 and verse 24 in chapter 34 tell us. Verse 3 and 4 read, "But I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt. Pharaoh will not listen to you, but I will put my hand into Egypt and bring the military divisions of my people, the Israelites, out of the land of Egypt by great acts of judgment." The Lord repeated his intention to harden Pharaoh's heart, as he said he would. He would do this to accomplish his purposes for Israel. As God used Moses and Aaron as his instruments, he would also use Pharaoh as well. This raises some questions. If God hardened Pharaoh's heart, was Pharaoh responsible for his own actions? Doesn't the Bible state that Pharaoh hardened his own heart? We are introduced here to the mystery of the intersection of divine sovereignty and human responsibility. Tracing this intersection throughout Exodus is an interesting and instructive process. Before Moses left Midian for Egypt, God stated in Exodus 4:21 that he would harden Pharaoh's heart so that Pharaoh would not free the Israelites. Six times in the book of Exodus, it's recorded that the Lord did exactly what he said he would do. He hardened Pharaoh's heart. Well, the Lord doing exactly what he said he'd do is no surprise. Yet the Bible also states in chapter 8, verses 15 and 32, that Pharaoh hardened his own heart. Interestingly, in 7:22 and 8:19, the Bible records that Pharaoh's heart was hardened without giving a cause. Both God and Pharaoh hardened Pharaoh's heart. How can this be? While many scholars have speculated in positive and meaningful ways about how divine sovereignty and human responsibility can coexist, in the end, it's a mystery that we must embrace with humility and faith. Hardening refers to an individual's refusal to accept or obey God. Such hardness of heart dulled a person's sensitivity to sin and led to a life ingrained in sin and disobedience. In these cases, repentance seemed unlikely, if not impossible. Pharaoh did not know God or want to know him. Although the exploding population of the Israelites worried Pharaoh, he did not want to lose the cheap labor they provided. Thus, again and again, his heart was hardened against God's command. God used Pharaoh's hard heart to increase his signs and wonders in Egypt, judging the Egyptians for enslaving his people and demonstrating his control over all creation. The plagues would demonstrate the Egyptians God's inability to protect their nation and people. God's accomplishment of his will would demonstrate his sovereignty and power. He would bring the powerful nation of Egypt to its knees. This would accomplish two things. First, it would punish the Egyptians. Second, it would show the Egyptians who was the one true God and give them a chance to know him. God's plan did not depend on the cooperation of Pharaoh. That's not a surprise. Pharaoh might refuse to obey God, but he could never prevent God from delivering his people. Neither could Pharaoh nor his army stop God from accomplishing his will, nor the Egyptian gods. Verse 5 reads, "The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring the Israelites from among them." This verse reminds us that God is always working in the world, so all people will recognize his power and sovereign rule. The Israelites knew of God through the experiences of the patriarchs, mainly Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, later known as Israel. and through the signs Moses and Aaron had already shown them, as we read in 4:30. But the Egyptians, so far, had no experience with God, and they had no desire to know Him. God's words, through Moses and His powerful acts of judgment, would bear witness to Pharaoh and the Egyptians of who they were dealing with. They would be compelled to acknowledge the Lord's supremacy because of His mighty acts of judgment. God would bring Pharaoh and the Egyptian people to their knees. One day, all people will know the Lord is the one true God, either in salvation or in judgment. Simple obedience is our next subheading, and it covers verses 6 and 7 of chapter 7. Those verses read, "So Moses and Aaron did this. They did just as the Lord commanded them. Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron was 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh." How did Moses and Aaron respond to this stunning revelation of God's sovereign plan to set His people free and show Himself as the one true God to Pharaoh? Wisely, they obeyed God's instructions completely. They did exactly what they were told to do. God loves this kind of obedience. In fact, God would rather us obey Him than to plan and perform any elaborate series of services or events. Samuel, in 1 Samuel 15:23, said, "Does the Lord delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as much as in obeying the voice of the Lord? To obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed is better than the fat of rams." Believers demonstrate true faith in God through the simple act of obedience. There is a kind of physical and spiritual tenacity to the faith of Moses and Aaron. Verse 7 draws attention to the age of Moses and Aaron. Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron was 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. At an age when most of us are settled into retirement, Moses and Aaron were beginning what turned out to be 40 years of their life actively involved in ministry, leading, instructing, and shepherding God's people. We will never, I repeat never, be too old to be used by God to accomplish His purposes and plans. Signs and wonders is the last subheading for today's lesson, and it covers verses 8 through 13 of chapter 7. Verses 8 through 10 read, "The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, 'When the Pharaoh tells you, perform a miracle, tell Aaron, take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh. It will become a serpent.' So Moses and Aaron went into Pharaoh and then did just what the Lord had commanded. Aaron threw his staff down before the Pharaoh and his official, and it became a serpent. When Moses and Aaron requested that Pharaoh let the people go at the first of this lesson, chapter 5, verse 1, they had not yet performed any signs from the Lord demonstrating His sovereign power. Exodus 7, 8 through 13 narrates the sign of turning Aaron's staff into a serpent. This was the first sign Moses and Aaron demonstrated to Pharaoh before God unleashed the 10 plagues on Egypt. Verses 11, 12, and 13 read, "But Pharaoh called the wise men and sorcerers, the magicians of Egypt, and they also did the same thing by their occult practices. Each one threw down his staff, and it became a serpent. But Aaron's staff swallowed their staves. However, Pharaoh's heart was hard, and he did not listen to them," that's Moses and Aaron, "as the Lord had said." Turning Moses' staff into a serpent was the first of three instances in which the magicians of Egypt saw the sign that Aaron had performed and then did the same thing by their occult practices. During the first plague sent by God, 7:22 records these sorcerers as turning the Nile waters into blood. During the second plague, the plague of the frogs, 8:7 records these magicians causing frogs to cover the land. These magicians functioned as mystical priests in the service of the Egyptian gods. The text does not provide any explanation for the means by which these magicians performed their signs. Some of their feats likely involved trickery or illusion, and some may have used satanic power, since worshiping the gods of the underworld was part of their religion. One thing is perfectly clear. The fact that Aaron's staff swallowed the staves of the Pharaoh's magicians shows that God's power is supreme over all. Verse 13 records that Pharaoh's heart was still hard. He wouldn't listen. No matter the sign and wonders that Moses and Aaron did, Pharaoh increasingly hardened his heart. As a result, things went from bad to worse for Pharaoh and Egypt. One can only imagine how the land of Egypt was ravaged with its destruction and disgrace as a series of plagues from God came upon them one after another. Our highlighted verses end with 7:13. Beginning with 7:14 and going through 10:29, the end of our study material for today, there is a detailed description of each of the first nine plagues God sent upon the Egyptians. The 10th plague, the death of the firstborn, is part of next week's study. As you read through what God did to Pharaoh and the Egyptians, it is really hard to comprehend and or understand. The stench of death and destruction must have been in the air. Further, it must have been a very humbling process for Pharaoh and the Egyptians to see their imaginary deities, their gods, confronted and exposed as false gods or deities. Pharaoh continued to harden his heart, refusing to listen to the voice of God and set God's people free. How sad it is when God gives very convincing evidence of himself to us, yet we refuse to listen, obey, worship, and serve him. Pharaoh was without excuse, and so is everyone else who sees evidence of God's power and presence and does not respond in faith. In calling Moses to lead his people out of Egypt in bondage, God demonstrated to Moses that he is holy. He then revealed to Moses that he was also all-powerful and that no false deity or earthly king could thwart his plans. In a brief period of time, Moses was exposed to God's holiness and omnipotence. These two attributes of God would continually be evident as Moses led God's people all the way to the edge of the Promised Land.